Hey there, it's the Eric part before the show starts, the part that they're like, uh-oh, it's Eric talking before the music starts. So I have two thoughts for you. Tomorrow is a big voting day in the United States, and if you are distressed or upset or happy, I don't think you can complain if you don't vote. So tomorrow, go and vote. If you don't know who to vote for, I would suggest searching some local news sources for people's positions. And if you're not quite sure, maybe consider voting for a woman. I think if there are more women involved in politics, it might be less of a drama than what it is right now. And I have a poem I want to read for you, all right? It's by Maya Angelou. I note the obvious differences in the human family. Some of us are serious, some thrive on comedy. Some declare their lives are lived as true profundity. Others claim they really live the real reality. The variety of our skin tones can confuse, bemuse, delight, brown and pink, beige and purple, tan and blue and white. I've sailed upon the seven seas. I've stopped in every land. I've seen wonders of the world, not yet one common man. I know 10,000 women called Jane and Mary Jane, but I've not seen any two who were really the same. Mirror twins are different, although their features jibe, and lovers think quite different thoughts while lying side by side. We love and lose in China, we weep on England's moors, laugh and moan in Guinea, and thrive on Spanish shores. We seek success in Finland, are born and die in Maine. In minor ways we differ, in major we're the same. I note the obvious differences between each sort and type, but we are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. Hey, how you doing? Thanks for downloading the show. Thanks for coming to check out Garden Fork Radio. It's me, Eric. I have a YouTube channel and this podcast and a website, and we just kind of do eclectic DIY stuff. Today we're going to do a deep dive into solar and electric cars and maybe a little on Elon Musk if we have time. But I've got on one of my best friends, Rick, who is Mr. Electric Car.
Well, Mr. Semi-Electric Car. Good morning, Eric. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. It's Friday. It's raining. People need a new podcast from us. So,
yeah.
I was like, I need a show. Call Rick.
Yeah. Well, you've had some good guests lately. You had Will on, and before that, you had Aaron.
Yeah, and Rich G, our
Performance
coach.
And so it's been a while since I've been on, but I've enjoyed listening. You guys always have interesting things to talk about.
Well, you and I are going to talk interesting things today. I wanted to talk about you just acquired a new Prius, and then someone on our Facebook group asked Rick, because he posted a picture of his Prius, why people think electric cars are so much better because they're being charged. You know, you have to electrically charge them, and that pollutes the air because electricity is created somewhere to charge the car. We'll talk about that. And then I just put a whole house solar array. I don't know if that's what it's called, but a giant solar array on the roof of my row house in Brooklyn. So I wanted to talk. I haven't really talked about that, so we could talk about that a little bit.
And well, I don't think you've talked about that at all, or I would have picked up on it.
Well, my whole thing is don't talk about it till it happens, because if I just talk about it, I never do it.
Yeah, I understand that.
That was something we touched on with Rich G, who's like this great, he's like my therapist, you know? So you can listen to that podcast. That's about three podcasts ago. Oh, and Garden Fork, I'm doing the final paperwork, will be on Spotify, Google Play Music, and iHeartRadio. It might already be on iHeartRadio and Spotify. Google Play Music, I didn't realize I have to fill out some kind of form. And I locked up the Google site when I was trying to fill out the form. So
So this is the Garden Fork Radio Empire.
Right. And that is all thanks to our Patreon supporters. If you want to be a monthly supporter of Garden Fork, it's kind of like the NPR PBS model where you like $3 a month is what I ask for. You can give less. It's totally fine. That information is in the show notes here or go to patreon.com/gardenfork. But that money helps pay to get this on the servers into those different outlets. So let's start by talking about your cars. You now have, you had a Prius, now you have another one. How did that happen?
Well, about 3 weeks ago, I was on the expressway and there was a very loud bang and an abrupt loss of power.
Ooh.
And when I pulled off to the side of the road, there was oil leaking from the hole in the bottom of the oil pan. And I thought, well, this is probably not good.
Maybe you threw a rod.
I think it did. And this is on the Matrix. We had a 2000, what is it? It's 14 years old, I think. And we buy cars new. And people say, well, you know, then you lose all that depreciation when you drive them off the lot. But we drive cars forever until they literally die. And we take care of them. Our first car that we bought the day before we got married in 1976 was an Oldsmobile, brand new Cutlass, and it lasted 19 years. And so we just drive them until they drop, and then we'll buy a new car.
Yep.
And so that happened with this Matrix when we came back from Puerto Rico this time on assignment down there. And so it was doing great. And then just it ran like a champ. Never had a brake job. That's kind of amazing for a car that old. Never had a new clutch. It was just tires and batteries and all the replaceable things that just go bad on a car.
Yeah.
But then it had a catastrophic failure. And then we bought in 2006 a Prius, what they call a third generation Prius. And that was kind of our road car and around town and whatnot. And it has run perfectly as well. And so let's get another Prius.
All right. And so hold on. So the first Prius is a hybrid Prius. It has an electric motor and a gas motor.
Right. And they just kind of support each other. The electric motor supplies power to the electric motors on the wheel, or the electric battery supplies power to the electric motors on the wheels that assist in certain situations the internal combustion engine. And then when the internal combustion engine is also generating power back into the battery, like on a long coast downhill or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they support each other, and we've been averaging about 50 miles per gallon with that system, and we've been really happy with it. In the Prius business, or among the fans, it's called hypermiling, and there are all these tricks you do. You know, take your foot off the accelerator really early. Probably annoys all the people behind you, but you know, if there's a red light, there's a red light. You're gonna have to stop eventually.
Right. So you're going to coast to the red light rather than hitting your brakes right before the red light.
Exactly. And then you're easy on the accelerator, and you use your cruise control a lot because it controls things a lot better than your foot ever would. And so we were hypermiling around. We're getting around 50 miles to the gallon, and it's still in a great shape. And so that became our number two car. And we were looking around. We bought a Prius Prime. Now, a Prius Prime is exactly like the old Prius. It has the electric battery and the electric motors and the internal combustion engine, but it also has an extra large battery that you run, you plug in to get that extra charge up, and you can get about 25 miles before the engine comes on.
Oh, and so you're plugging it in your garage,
right?
To an electric. Into the electric outlet of your house,
mm-hmm.
and then you're charging, and then for around town trips, you're able to motor around at, you know, varying lower speeds, and then it hits an X point in the storage of the battery where it says, okay, now I need the gas motor's help.
Exactly, and it starts off. And doing that, we're averaging about 200 miles to a gallon.
Wow.
And we have, I think, 700 miles on the odometer now. And we have, I bet we haven't used half a tank of gas. So, it's really working out quite well for us. And the electricity here is really cheap. and so, well, relatively cheap compared to gasoline. And so it really works out just around town for, you know, us. We can do almost a week sometimes and never turn on the gasoline engine.
So you posted a picture of, okay, I've got a new Prius, and somebody asked, which a question which I have heard many times before. Do you have the question up in front of you?
Let's see. Yeah, hang on just a second. Penny asked, can you explain why driving a car that runs on gas is worse than driving a car that runs on electricity? Isn't it plugged into a system that is powered by burning coal or nuclear fusion? And I think it's fission, but anyway, isn't fusion what we're shooting for? But
right.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. Into a nuclear charger or a power plant. And the answer is there's some subtle differences that if you're not really thinking about these things, what that says makes sense because it is true, but there are shades of variation. First of all, we are on Dominion Power here in Virginia Beach, their clean energy plan. And so most of our energy comes from wind and solar installations that is owned by Dominion. And we pay extra for that every month. It's something we signed up for because we wanted to give a market signal that there's a market for that. And we're glad to do it.
So you opted for like their clean energy plan where they're going to, the energy you're buying from them is made from solar or wind or something like that.
Right. And, you know, I realize that it all comes down one line. It's all, you know, mashed together, but we're paying to generate solar and wind out in the Appalachians, and it gets run into the system. And so, yeah, we feel pretty good about that. So essentially charging this engine charging the battery produces no carbon or any kind of smokestack things because we're paying for solar and wind energy.
So basically, to plug your car into the grid has a less of a carbon footprint than you burning gas in a gas burning car, because the emissions coming out of the exhaust pipe of a gasoline car are much more polluting than most of the emissions coming out of a standalone generating plant, which has a bunch of scrubbers and pollution restrictions on it, the pollution regulations on it, to say, hey, you can't put all this stuff up a smokestack.
Exactly. It's much easier to regulate a single source, even if it's a large source of pollution, going up one smokestack to remove more. And it's also more efficient. It works better than it is to try to remove all the pollutants from each individual tailpipe on every car on the road.
And those cars are idling an awful lot. And your generating plants do not idle. Well, they spin them down. I mean, they keep them running at a point. But they can ramp them up when demand is needed. And at most cars, I think, I don't know what the number is, but it's like a huge amount of their time are spent idling at traffic lights or stuck in traffic. And you're just spewing this stuff out. So
right. Or just sitting curbside waiting for something. You know, it happens a lot. And also, electric cars, including our Prius, we plug it in at night before we go to bed. They mostly charge at night. And during at night, you cannot take a gas-fired or a coal-fired power plant offline. It's idling a little bit. They can cut it back, but they can't take it off. It takes several days to turn it off and then to restart it because of all the heat and whatnot. And so they idle it back, and essentially that's wasted energy that they're producing even right at idle. And so electric cars are plugging, and battery cars are plugging in and absorbing that energy that otherwise would be wasted. In fact, a lot of utility companies will actually give you a big discount. You have like a meter they put in for you. And if you do your washing and drying at night and use this timer kind of thing, they'll give you a special rate just so you won't use that energy during the day. You'll use it at night when it's kind of waste energy anyway.
Yeah. So long story short, it is more carbon neutral to have a Prius or an electric car than it is to have a gasoline car.
Exactly. And then, you know, the other thing is you're not spewing a lot of the exhaust emissions from cars are heavier than air, and they actually stay at ground level. And so you get ground level ozone that is getting produced. You get all these different pollutants in a place, like in New York City, where you have so many cars and it's all kind of hemmed in block by these very tall buildings. People on the ground who are walking or biking or skating or whatever are breathing a lot more of these fumes and tiny particulates that are being put out by your cars than would be necessary if you use an electric vehicle in town. And that's the reason a lot of places, I think London is talking about restricting, in a few years, restricting access to the interior part of the old city or whatever they call it of London to electric vehicles only, to get better air quality for people who are actually walking and running along the side of the roads.
Yeah, they're working on two things here in the city, I know, New York City. Congestion pricing, which, because of the archaic rules of New York State, has to be approved by the state Senate rather than just New York City wanting to control pollution. But the city also has an app where you can report idling trucks. A lot of times trucks just park and they idle and they're having their sandwich or they're just sitting there waiting for something. And as long as they're not having to have a refrigerant, some kind of refrigerant running, to keep food cold that they're delivering or something, there's an app now that you can report them and you get part of the fine, believe it or not.
Wow. But, it's just, it makes a lot of sense. We were thinking, I like that idea actually, but going back to our cars, we were thinking our next car would be an all-electric vehicle before the Matrix died. And, one is our long-distance car that you can drive, a good distance on gasoline power.
Right.
And the other would be an all-electric. And they're getting up there. I think the Nissan Leaf is about 100 miles now. A whole bunch of new electric vehicles, the Chevy Bolt, B-O-L-T, not V-O-L-T. The Chevy Bolt is a couple of hundred miles now, I think. That's pretty good distance, and everybody's bringing these things online. Electric cars are really the standard in a lot of Europe now. You go to Denmark or Norway and a lot of the Scandinavian countries, the greatest number of new cars coming online are electric vehicles. And then if people want to take or do take a long trip, they rent an internal combustion car,
or they
ride the rails. They get someplace because they have really fabulous rail service in Europe. They ride the rails somewhere, get there, and rent another electric vehicle to be around town with. And it's a good solution. And for us, the Prius is the Prius Prime. We now call it the Prius Prime and the Prius Primitive. to differentiate between them, but the Prime is a terrific road car. You feel like you're sitting at the controls of a shuttle on the Enterprise or something. It's just amazing all the stuff it does. And for folks that are getting a little bit older, it has things that help us drive. One of the things is when you're backing up, it looks for cross traffic. That helps lot. It'll actually park itself. I don't trust it to do that, but, and then the lane change and maintain the lane and that type of stuff. Adaptive cruise control, you set it for say 65 on the expressway. And if you're running up behind someone, it will, back off automatically to maintain some distance, just things to help people drive. And, this is all technology that is being developed to go into self-driving cars. And when you put it all together, it works, so far pretty good. And as you build each individual part, you kind of perfect it, it works out. And so we are thrilled. The other Prius is doing fine. The Prius Primitive is doing fine. And so we'll drive it as long as it lasts.
How many miles are on the older one?
Probably 180, maybe 200. So I don't keep track.
And you've never had to replace the battery on that.
Oh, no. And that was one of the things everyone gets upset about, or, you know, these batteries are $10,000 a piece. You can't afford them. What Prius owners do if they need a new battery, and some have had problems with it, is they just go to a junkyard and they pull an old battery out. They test it and they put it in their new car, and they spent maybe $300.
Boom. Done.
Boom. Yeah. Because this is a kind of car. And it's typical of a lot of cars nowadays. It has, I think, 15 airbags inside. And so the whole, and then everything else is crushable, to absorb impact.
Right.
And so essentially, if you have a good wreck in one of these cars, it's totaled.
The car crumples, but you're saved.
Yeah. And with all the airbags and everything, you're in pretty good shape. I saw a video once of a 18-wheeler that hit a Prius that turned left in front of it. And it was at highway speed, and there were four people in the car, and all of them lived, and none of them were hurt very badly.
Nice.
And I thought, geez. not an experience I'd want to have, but it's good to know that it's there. But that's the way it's going with most cars now. Crumple zones that crush, and lots of airbags to protect from the head down to the dashboard and from the steering wheel and from the sides and everything. And so it's really it's good technology, but it's kind of a single use in the worst case scenario.
Wow. All right. So sign me up. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, I'll keep you posted, but we expect, of course you and I don't do anything without Consumers Report. And I was looking at Consumers Report the other day, or before we bought this, and it's still Priuses are the number one I'd buy it, from owners who say I'd buy it again if when this Prius dies, we'll buy another Prius. It's just a nice kind of car.
Hey, real quick here, I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast apps, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right? Thank you. So, to staying on the solar track here, I sent Rick a picture the other day.
I couldn't believe it. I didn't believe what I saw.
I live in Brownstone, Brooklyn, and we put a solar array, an array of 18 full-size panels on the roof of our row house, on the roof of our building here. And I have always wanted to noodle around with solar. I have a individual panel that I've played with and thought, oh, I could, because I've talked on the show before about wanting to run the Garden Fork office on solar.
Mm-hmm.
And my neighbor across the street, I saw him have solar panels installed. I watched him do the whole thing, and it ends up, he actually works for the company that did the installation, but he wanted them in his own house. And he was super helpful in providing all sorts of information. And so we signed on to have it done as well. And it's pretty amazing. There are kind of the short story is in New York City and New York State, the governor and the mayor have made solar a priority. And so there are some pretty amazing tax incentives and rebates available. And then there's also a historic tax credit because we live in a historic neighborhood. It's brownstones and limestones and stuff.
Oh, boy.
And then there are credits and rebates. I'm still sorting it all out for other upgrades you have to do to your house so that it can be solar. Like we upgraded our electric panel. We had to repair the roof. We did some work on the front of the building. So that all gets wrapped up. And it looks like about 75% of the price of the installation will be deducted from our taxes or an outright rebate. It's more deductions than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this enormous sticker shock, but then you realize that you're going to get 3/4 of it back.
Yeah.
So we have the array is up there. It is hooked in. It has the, I have a 7,000 watt, 7 kilowatt or 7,000 watt, 7,000 watt inverter underneath my electric panels in the basement. It's hooked into our electric panels, and now we're just waiting for Con Ed to put in the net metering meter, because the current meter, there's two meters. We're going to combine it into one, so my tenants will have free electricity, which is another big plus. And it'll be a net meter, so we will sell our excess production back to Con Edison at a fixed rate. And so it's a win-win for us. We're going to solar our house. We're going to install efficient air conditioning splits and some other upgrades. So we're basically running a zero-cost house. I mean, there's the cost of the solar. But according to the numbers that have been crunched for us by the solar company, it'll pay back in about 7 to 9 years.
That's wonderful.
And it has an expected life of 25 years, the panels and everything.
Wow.
So it was very interesting. The company came in. If anyone is in the New York City area and is interested, if you email me, radio@gardenfork.tv, I can hook you up with the company that did the work for us. It's soup to nuts. I'm a contractor in the city, so I can watch people and I kind of get an idea if they know what they're doing. And I've seen some other solar installs and I'm like, what is this? And these guys are really top notch. And they did it in a day and a half. And once we get the net meter in, we can throw the switch on the system and it'll run. The other bonus is that the kilowatts that we're selling back into the grid, into Con Ed, will be at a fixed price. And legislation to change that is going to kick in the next year or two. We are grandfathered into that price. If you're not going to do this right away, that kilowatt price that you're going to sell back is going to fluctuate to the market rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually going to be making more money than people that go solar in a year or two.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, that's hardly fair in a way, because, you know, I'm having to subsidize your solar product. But what they don't get are the economics of building new prime or main production coal-fired generators and that kind of thing. They are terribly expensive. Our newest one on the Dominion system out in Wise County, which is far out west, very far tip where Virginia just almost disappears into nothing. And it was $8 billion to build that.
And you're paying that through your electric bill.
Yeah. And every ratepayer is paying that. And so every time you do not have to build, see that's the first rule of energy, of working with energy, is the very cheapest kind of energy you can get is the kind where you don't have to pay anything, to produce it. And that means reduction, make your house as energy efficient as possible. And then, you know, doing everything you can to keep everyone from having to buy a new, pay for a new $8 billion, coal-fired generator. And, by actually reimbursing you, they're actually, saving a lot of money for all the citizens of, in your electrical system. I don't know what you call it up there. Is it Con Ed or
Con Edison? Yeah.
Yeah. Con Edison. So it really works out, but, you know, you just have to think about it properly.
And the other light bulb for me was that there's a graph. They have a very nice, you know, multi-page PDF that they showed us with all the numbers. But the Con Ed rates historically have gone up every year. And our electrical generation on our roof is at a fixed cost, a fixed kilowatt per hour now. Whereas the kilowatt hours that we would buy from Con Ed are going to keep going up every year. So
right.
The longer we own the system, the more money we're saving every year, because otherwise we'd have to pay Con Ed for the same amount of electricity. We're just going to have to keep paying higher and higher prices. So
right.
It's
now,
very
yours,
interesting.
Yeah. The picture you sent me, it looks like it's up on a tall awning. How tall is that?
It's on a canopy. It's 10 feet off the roof. There is a couple of reasons for that. We want to, first of all, use our roof we want to put a roof deck up there. Mm-hmm. And if you install solar panels right into the roof, that takes up 2/3 of the roof. So you can't do that. The second thing is that canopy with the panels shades the roof. So it keeps the building cooler. And the roof deck is going to be under the canopy. So it's like a permanent umbrella. Because New York City roofs are really hot.
I'm sure they are.
Because they bake. We painted ours silver. I'm going to paint it white soon. But it's surprising how many people have black roofs. And I'm like, why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other reason is the fire department does not like heavy objects on a roof that is supported by wood joists. And we live in it's a brick building with wood joists that has a limestone front. So if there's a fire and the fireman on the third floor and all of a sudden a joist burns through, these solar panels aren't going to come crashing through and hit them.
Wow. You know, I saw that picture of your awning, and it reminded me that some places down in Florida particularly set up awnings like that for their employee parking, and the employees park underneath it to keep their cars cool. And now they've added charging stations for electric cars onto the awnings so that you just drive in underneath, you plug in, and it charges your car every day. Which brings me to the next kind of futuristic thing that is coming, they're thinking about. One of the possibilities. Yeah, I love this kind of stuff. If there is a critical mass of electric vehicles that are plugged in, and if you have stations everywhere that are plugged in, then if you charge at night and then you plug it in during the day while you're not using it, and cars are sitting idle almost 90% of the time, when your utility needs more electricity during the summer for that surge or peak period, they can actually draw off 20% of the energy they had sold you from your electric battery in your car, still leaving you plenty, but then use that instead of buying another short-term power supply, which is usually a jet engine, an auxiliary that they can turn on and off.
We have two of those near us.
Yeah, take that energy back from you and then, you know, chart and credit you with it, but use that as their surge for a certain period of time.
So they're banking. That's just kinda, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're right. That's a good way to put it. They're banking energy in your car. I just hit my microphone.
You're talking with your hands again, Rick.
Yeah. They bank it in your car. You pay for it initially, but if they use it, they reimburse the money. And it's like using your entire grid as a battery of sorts.
Yeah, that's very cool. And people might be, at first they're like, well, why would I let them take energy, the power I just paid for, away? Well, you're going to have a net meter, and you're charging your car at night, which is much cheaper, and you're saving them for having to build these turbine powered on-demand electric plants. We have one right on the harbor here. And when that thing fires up, you know, you can see those heat waves in the summer through the, you know, you're looking at the skyline, and all of a sudden you see this kind of wobbly air. when they fire up, man, they are like, I'm like, okay, there's a peak energy day, because they're on demand, and it's pretty amazing. They're natural gas powered, but yeah, you're saving money, you're saving carbon going there. But that's very cool, the whole idea of a battery bank, because one of the biggest problems with solar is it doesn't work at night. So how do you store solar electricity? There's people in Europe that will have a lake up on a mountain, and they all day they pump water up to the lake, and then at night, if they need electricity, they open the pipe basically, and the gravity feeds a turbine at the bottom, so it's like a water turbine hooked up to a generator, and that's that water, that pond, is an electric battery.
Yeah. You know, they're actually doing that on huge scales with wind as well. I mean, the big offshore wind units powering water up into a big lake, and then running big turbines to supply entire regions with electricity at night. So, you know, that's a battery. You're essentially storing kinetic energy up high, and then it runs back down. So there are lots of interesting ways to do this. Of course, brother Elon Musk has that wonderful battery plant out in the desert out west. And he is making these whole single unit batteries you put on your solar installation.
Yeah, that's my next thing. Wall. I'm looking at that.
Oh, okay. Go right ahead.
Well, they might be illegal in New York City because the fire department doesn't like rechargeable batteries that large.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a power wall, and you will charge. It's essentially a bajillion AA nickel metal hydride batteries in a rack. And you will charge that during the day because most people aren't home during the day. I am, which is unusual. But and then when you come home at night and you turn on your air conditioner, all that, it draws from that battery. So it's a local storage source for your electricity. But I'm very excited about that as well.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that people don't think about, and I'm really enthused, I have a terribly shaded roof, and it's not my property that is shading me, so I can't do much about it.
Yep.
But in Germany, and they're what, about the same latitude as Boston or so, they require now every new build to have solar hot water. And even if it's just an assist for a boiler type system.
For a conventional system, yeah.
For a conventional system. And there is no reason everyone shouldn't have solar hot water. It's an amazing system. They're really very simple to operate and keep, to automate. And they can provide lots and lots of hot water for nothing. You're using the sun's energy. And even if it's just to boost your own gas or electric system, it makes a lot of sense to install hot water.
Yeah, you're essentially preheating the water that's entering the hot water tank in your basement. And the less, if instead of, so in that tank, instead of getting cold water from the water main or the well, you're getting this preheated water, which is lukewarm at, you know, maybe it just takes less BTUs and less natural gas or oil to heat up that water because it's already kind of warm. So,
yeah. And from my neighbor's experience, since we don't have pool anymore, they have solar hot water heaters to extend their season. And they it's almost like scalding sometimes during the summer. They have to cut it way back and even add just cold water to their pool to make it comfortable anymore. Sun is a powerful source, and energy and water is a wonderful way to store heat. And so, it's just a win-win for everybody.
I talked about this with Rich G, but there's the Joe Rogan podcast, and I've been listening. He recommended I listen to the Elon Musk interview, which is 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me 45 minutes to park the car the other day. So I drove around listening to this or sitting on a street waiting. And he makes several good points. I'm about 2/3 of the way in, a kind of the conversation. It just kind of doesn't interest me as much. But one of the things he says is, look, you know, we've got this thermonuclear device up in the sky for half the day. We should use it.
Right.
That's being the sun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So he had some very good points. He's talking about the Tesla, and I really want a Tesla Model 3. And I heard that they're going to come out with a hatchback because that means I could get the dogs into a Tesla, and that would be very
right.
intriguing. I wanted to circle back to the solar array.
Mm-hmm.
The initial cost can be quite high, but they offer some very creative financing at incredibly low interest rates. One of them, there's no payments, and then there's a balloon payment at the end if you opt for that. But when you, a lot of these companies, they're going to, at least the one we went with, it's kind of a sticker shock thing. But if you don't have that money up front, if you don't have that money in the bank, you can take out a bridge loan and still do the install. And it might cost $1,000 in financing fees, but it is doable, even if you don't have all the money at one place at one time. So,
wow. Yeah, they're getting quite creative about it. And I'm just thrilled. We had to fly the other, a couple of weeks ago. And you look down on major cities now, and there is a lot of stealth solar down there that no one's talking about, on top of factories, on top of businesses, and yep. And even skyscrapers. And you talk like it's kind of people think it's some sort of edge technology, but it's really becoming very mainstream, and you're seeing it almost everywhere.
Yay. Yay. All right, so we've been going on here for a while. So
yeah, I did want to talk about one more thing while we're talking about electric cars, and then we'll close it off. Almost every brand is coming out with its own electric vehicle in the next year or two. And I think it's Audi that was doing an ad recently, and there are 10,000 moving parts in a standard Audi ICE or internal combustion engine vehicle. In their new electric vehicle, there are only 1,000 moving parts.
Wow.
And I think about that and I go, wow, isn't that cool? It's wonderful that they can make 10,000 parts all move together and get somewhere. That's wonderful engineering. But the idea of just 1,000 parts, that essentially means that, you know, other than tires and, you know, and a few replaceables, you know, a car could last almost forever.
Nice. All right. Let's all get electric cars. Plug in.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's it for me. What about you?
I'm done. I got to go eat lunch or else I will crash here. So radio@gardenfork.tv, everyone. I want to hear from you about your electric solar or cars. And maybe our executive producer, Jimmy Gutz, will weigh in about solar heating your pools because he is involved in the pool business. That's all I'll tell you.
So that'd be good. Okay. And we have a Garden Fork discussion group on Facebook. And you have to request to join, but that's just so we can keep the scammers out. There are a couple of questions there. If you answer the questions, we know you're a real person, and so that's easy. If you don't answer the questions, we'll look at your profile, and
I don't let them in if they don't answer the questions.
Yeah, like, well, that's kind of the way I am. But if you got a dog, you get in. You know, picture of a dog. If you doing some cooking or gardening, you're probably going to get in. But you know, if you don't have any of those things, you better answer the questions because nobody's going to look otherwise.
Yeah. All right. Thank you all. Let me know. radio@gardenfork.tv. Thanks for taking the time, Rick.
Okay. Talk to you later, my friend.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.